PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
Hey PTs, are you maxed out on hours? You tired of endless patient notes? Still chipping away at those student loans? PTLive.me is an on-demand patient clinic hub helping licensed PTs get ahead of the rat race. Stay tuned for more or check out ptlive.me.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right. The next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. On the show today, he went from the University of Maryland with a degree in kinesiology to GW for his master's in ex-phys to eventually Marymount University for his DPT. Go Saints. After graduating and working in what he described as a PT mill, he went out on his own and opened Spark Physiotherapy in Alexandria, Virginia. He is a cash-based private practice owner with a love for sports PT, Clash of Clans, the online video game, and the piano man, Billy Joel, the entertainer. He's the man. On the PT Pintcast today, Dr. Carlos Berrio. Carlos, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
I like the fact that you picked this bar. We're in Alexandria, just a couple miles from where your clinic is. And I'm a Lord of the Rings fan. I'm a geek. I love the sci-fi. And we're at Bilbo Baggins Pub.
I'm expecting like a little dude to walk in here.
Hairy feet.
Yeah.
I like this place. So hardest questions are always up first. What are we drinking today? What's on the menu?
I'm having Hopulent IPA Nitro.
Yeah, the Epic Brewing Company. That's Utah and Colorado. Right. They've got their own menu here at the Green Dragon Pub, Bilbo Baggins. I went with Bilbo's Lager, which is the Caboose Brewing out of Vienna, Virginia, which is not far away.
Hey, local
boy. First up, we always cheers. So cheers to you. Thanks for taking some time out to talk with
us. Salute. Thank you very much, man.
So we're both Saints.
That's a fact.
Marymount Saints.
Yeah, not neat.
So want to talk, you've got a little bit of a different background. You started off doing exercise physiology. You opened your own training business, personal training. And then from there, how did things kind of meander towards physical therapy? What did you see? What were you happy with or not happy with that said, you know what, I'm going to go towards this thing that is PT? Talk about that, the little journey.
After my master's, figured I wanted to open my own little business. I was doing personal training for many years previous to that, on top of other jobs in corporate fitness. Spent about a year in that, realized it really wasn't for me. You know, being trapped in a dungeness fitness center and making sure people got their plyos in or got their cardio in. Working toward having a larger training business by itself. When that happened, I kind of jumped ship and said, you know, I need to take a little bit of a risk, make this more about my schedule, my clients, delivering high value in training. Probably about 6 or 7 years after that master's, I just pursued a business and we were called ProMotion Lifestyle and Performance. And at that point, you know, I was feeling good, working real early, kind of middle of the days off, working late on your own. You're working in a small gym someplace. We were Arlington, Virginia. I started to get a lot of people as I progressed and my schedule got more and more full. People who were just hurt. You know, my shoulder hurts, my knee hurts. And as a trainer, I'm like, well, I want you to get better, but certainly I don't want to be the thing that makes you hurt worse.
Right.
So I started to kind of research some places that I could expand some of my skill set and still deliver some of the strength and conditioning.
In terms of Con Ed or actual location?
Actual continuing education.
Gotcha.
Yeah, in this case, formal graduate education.
Gotcha.
And physical therapy just seemed really to fit. I've been physical therapy once before, cliche as everybody else. And so when I kind of had a sense of what this would be like, I applied at Marymount University. It was the only school I applied to. I met some people before and during the process that I think just kind of created some nice relationships. Major Jason Craig is a great guy.
Yeah.
And so he and I hit it off. I think having the master's in clinical physiology is probably something that stood out on my resume.
Also the bachelor's in kinesiology, just because I'm sitting in a room with 38 classmates for 3 years, and I'm going around the room, and a lot of people are bio, kines, and a lot of times we're using terms, and I was a journalism mass communications major, you know? that was my background.
Yeah.
That's why the microphone is I'm at home right here.
Yeah.
Even just simple terms that you guys, as kines majors, had heard for years, when you went through that, I'm learning that for the first time. You know, I took all the prereqs and everything. I swear to God, I passed all the classes to get into PT school. But having that background has got to help, and that you had the bachelor's in kines, and you had the master's in ex-phys. Mm-hmm. That's a great place to start, man. Yeah, especially PT school.
It's real funny. I was sort of the envy and sort of the goat. I didn't at some point in our education, we had to take a summer exercise physiology course. And I think I was the last person to not have to take that because I had a previous master's degree. They changed the rule soon after that. I'm just glad I was
skated by.
Yeah, skated through that one. So I didn't take that class. But the DPT at Merrimack was amazing. I had amazing experiences, met some great people. I still am in contact with lots of folks who are running the program, as well as folks in my class who are out doing really great things. So it was a great spot.
It's a unique place to do PT school. I applied up and down the East Coast, mm-hmm. got into a couple places, didn't get into a couple places. But Merrimack wasn't necessarily my first choice, and that's not a slight. I wanted to be somewhere warmer and closer to a beach. And that wasn't going to happen because there aren't many PT schools down south, especially for a Yankee like me. And I found Merrimack in D.C., and we're in Arlington. So everybody's like, well, where's Arlington? I'm like, well, we're right across the river, crabby golfer, but a couple of three woods. I could be at the White House. And it's a cool place to go to school because there's a lot going on, and you can't do much in terms of PT school. Like, I'm going to take a three-day weekend. Not many three-day weekends when you have that kind of course load. But so if you have a night, D.C. right next to you, pretty badass.
Yeah, it's a pretty great spot.
Yeah. So PT school comes up and you go through the program, except for ex-phys, which I'm jealous of you. Well, you know, I liked ex-phys, so never mind. I like taking it. But you had the background in that. What did you see during PT school? Because now you're a private practice owner, and that's essentially what we're driving at with this episode, why I was kind of drawn to your story, is that you said, I went and worked at a place that was a mill. Mm-hmm. And the cool part, which I respect a ton because I've seen or heard places like this before, and they scare the crap out of me. You worked at a place which was, as you described, a PT mill, and mm-hmm. said, you know what? No. I'm going to do something else. Yeah. And that's ballsy because a lot of people won't do that. They will do the first part, which is this place sucks. I'm not going to stay here. This isn't the kind of PT I want to do. And this isn't what I went to school for. And then they'll kind of bitch about it under their breath. Maybe they'll move and go to a different place, but they won't do what you did, which is I don't want to do this. I want to do this over here and I'm going to go do that. And I'm going to take my ball and go home and I'm going to make it my way. What'd you see that made you say, you know what? No good. We're better than this as PTs.
Yeah. You know, the number one thing that I saw was that the value that we were able to deliver because the number of people we were seeing at one time was not at the standard that I thought was appropriate, especially because in my affiliations, in my previous experiences, I had already seen the role of a physical therapist in these mill-type settings was more of a crossing guard, kind of a, I'm going to do a bunch of notes, I'm going to shuffle the pieces as best I can to hopefully deliver some kind of useful treatment. And lots of times it wasn't in the manual sense because it was just someone doing some band thing over there and jumping on some unnecessary, you know, arm bike on that corner on that side. And, you know, the PT would occasionally peek up from their notes and say, hey, how many is that? You're dead. Okay, that's 10. Why don't you do 15 of that while I look at this person's hot pack or whatever the hell they were doing. We're better than this, you know? And so I kind of had a sense that maybe just more time one-on-one with clients would be, was the missing piece.
We say that all the time, is that's what separates us from other parts of the healthcare delivery system. And through no fault of the other aspects is they don't have enough time. And if we can, and we can because places like the place you started and still work at do, that's the difference between us is we ultimately spend a ton of time with our patients and can provide more because of that.
Right. No, that's a big piece of it. I've had conversations with other folks that say, well, you know, not every cash practice will work. Not every person who goes one-on-one and does the 60 minutes on their own really will be able to deliver the best care. Because
so let's rewind real quick. Go into what Spark can provide. This way people know where you're coming from.
Oh,
so
sure.
You do an hour with everybody.
Right.
What else?
So everyone is seen for 60 minutes on evaluation and for treatment. We also provide a couple different strength and conditioning and athletic development and personal training services. All of our physical therapists are also certified strength and conditioning specialists. And we also employ a few trainers on a contract basis.
Cool.
Yeah, so there are lots of different folks with lots of experience in movement, not just teaching movement and making movement more difficult, but assessing movement and really being able to fine-tune the things that make it move better. We kind of say it all the time. We're always looking for that line in someone's movement programming. We're trying to find the point where we have asked them to do too much, and this is overstressing the system, or you're not doing enough. In our setting, we're fortunate. We have the honor of working with folks who really have amazing goals. You know, everyone wants to be able to climb a set of stairs or sit at their desk for a long enough time without headaches. But we have people who, you know, I need to jump 9 feet because I play collegiate volleyball. Like, if my hands don't go above the net,
I'm not staying here.
You know, I need to shoot a lacrosse ball 100 miles an hour. All right, that's cool. Or I'm 75 and I played golf for 40 years, and now I hurt and I can't hit it more than 150 yards off the tee. What's going on with my body? Well, you know what? Yeah, we can do trunk strengthening and planks till you cry, but that has nothing to do with golf. Let me put you in a position that makes the muscles and the joints and the brain need to move you in a golf manner. And then I'm gonna make it harder, and then make it harder still, and then I'm gonna do it in a way what we kind of call the sterile environment. If I see that you hurt doing the movement that I've asked you to do, or you don't do it in a pure way, I understand it differently than my colleagues who are strength coaches, who are trainers, because I've both of those things. I just went the further step to get the breadth and the depth of the knowledge needed to understand what's happening on all of the levels of movement in the athletic mover. And we provide that as hard as we can, and I think we're doing a pretty good job at it. I'm not the only one there. I've got an amazing staff of folks who really have also drank the Kool-Aid about how we look at people move and how we teach people to move better, and really it's been a really fun ride.
All right. You also do something else that's a little bit different, and as a guy who did not come up in a healthcare background, one of the things that I struggle with, or at least have to take time to think about, is billing, how we're paying. So you do think something a little bit different, which is what?
We are a cash practice.
But you can't do that.
No, you can do that.
No, I've been on Twitter, man. A lot of people say you can't do that.
I've been told you can't do that. There's lots of places in the country that you cannot do that. And I will disagree with all of them. Here's a basic litmus test for this one. If there is a personal trainer, a yoga instructor, a Pilates instructor, an acupuncturist, a chiropractor, a personal trainer in your area within 50 miles who is charging a dollar amount for their work, then you can do cash practice. Okay? And the reason is this. I don't know when it happened, but all of a sudden we started devaluing ourselves as practitioners. My sense in the case of physical therapy education is that we're kind of told, well, you're below the physician, or you're below the insurance company's opinion of you. And so
you've always got to fight to prove that what you did is worth it. So make sure your documentation is defensible in terms of whatever you build for, you'll definitely get back. Or we know we're not going to get all of it, whatever we build for. So we build for a little over, so we get what we know we're going to get a little bit less.
And that game is not useful energy. And you know what's funny? And this is a little bit of a tangent, but there's a recent case in North Carolina about dry needling, and how dry needling is by itself as a modality can be argued, you know, yay or nay, whether it's useful or not, or more useful than anything else. But the idea that other practitioners of other disciplines of, let's say medicine, I'm going to call it pseudo medicine, let's say medicine, are trying to take an ability for us to practice a specific modality. For whatever reason, they claim, certain people claim, that it may infringe on their ability to maintain community safety. Really, it has to do with money, but that's fine. But in that case, one of the adjudicators actually said, and it's on record, that we like physical therapy. You know why? Because it's the only practice of physical medicine that has to prove every single thing that it does works. And it's weird because it's a fact. There is so much amazing evidence out there that there's a usefulness to all the kinds of stuff that we do.
Right.
Now, any one of us can argue, well, you don't got to do that much. You don't have to do that way, or you should do it like this to do it better. But that's nonsense, silliness, that we can all argue up forever. The fact that that was said in such a case where I feel proud that we have to prove it, and we've been doing a good job of proving it, and I think...
Otherwise, we wouldn't still be here.
That's right. We wouldn't be here at all.
All right, so you open up your own practice. You come out of school. You work for a PT mill. You said, no bueno. Walk me through it, because I know a little bit of your background, but I want everybody else to. We talked about being able to open a practice. I mean, who wouldn't want to be able to say, you know what, I want to do it my way. This is what I've seen that's good. This is what I've seen that's bad. But, you know, I don't have $50,000. I don't have $100,000
because
I'm in debt.
No, so
how did you do it, literally, coming out of school? When did you open Spark from graduation?
What was the
timeline?
4 hours. Yeah, about 4 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just said, all right,
I
graduated.
I hung my shingle immediately.
We're out of here.
Yeah.
All right.
So, like I said previously, I had a personal training business. I rebranded. Matter of fact, I rebranded in the physical therapy as a manager course in my second year. When I got my license, I said, okay, let's get this thing set up. I did have a job in a mill, a very, very big one.
When was that? During school?
That was immediate. So, like, as soon as I got done with school, I began in a PT mill. But the process for the shingle being hung had begun already.
Okay.
Yep. I had a physical space to do work within a week. The search for all that stuff was kind of going on. But I didn't have a lot of money. You know, I had the debt everybody has when they get out of school, and I have had all kinds of credit card debt. And at that point, fortunately or unfortunately, compared to my colleagues, I had, you know, a mortgage, and I had marriage, and I had all these things that kind of cost money and take time. I didn't go and get a loan for $1 million and buy a bunch of equipment and hire a bunch of staff. It was myself trying to figure out how I could do the best job with my manual skills, combine it with my training experience as a trainer and a strength coach, and do a good job for folks.
Well, let's talk about
about tangible. Where were you? How did you, I mean, because we're in Arlington, you're in Alexandria. In case anybody isn't familiar, 5 of the 10 most expensive, richest counties in the country of the United States touch each other around Washington, D.C.
Right.
So how'd you hang a shingle? Because how are you paying rent with debt and a mortgage and a marriage?
I had the really neat opportunity during school to take a bit of a field trip. I credit this guy to this day. His name is Michael O'Donnell. He had a clinic in, and he's a Marymount grad, by the way.
Okay.
He had a clinic in a building that was adjacent to the Blue Goose, which actually, if anybody's listening and not familiar with the Arlington area, the Blue Goose was the big, ugly building that the Marymount University Physical Therapy Program was housed in.
Right.
It used to
house the CIA.
Did it?
Yes.
I did not know that.
The CIA had offices. That's why the building was constructed. It was one of the oldest high-rise, I think it was 7 stories,
oh my goodness,
buildings in Arlington. And it stuck around for so long that eventually Marymount, who had taken it over and had the business and nursing and PT schools in it, it's just been demolished, and they're putting up 2 brand new ass-kicking skyscrapers to house, you know, students. Mm-hmm. But it was the weirdest looking building in Arlington.
It was awful.
It was ours.
That's right. You can't make that joke unless you've gone there. So, fortunately, there's this company called Regis, and they are in the business of virtual office space. And if anybody's not familiar, it's really simple. They buy a floor or a chunk of a floor of an office building, and then they outfit it with little teeny offices, and they staff it with some administration folks. They answer your phone.
So essentially, if you wanted to be a CPA and you wanted to have an office and an account and a receptionist, but you didn't want to pay and have to pay your health insurance and everything like that, you buy an office within this floor.
Yep.
A lot of other people are doing the same thing. Yep. You get the receptionist. Mm-hmm. You get all the perks and stuff that comes on with. So essentially, it's like you're co-oping with a bunch of other people who are small business owners.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, we were going over there for this field trip to meet this private practice guy. Everyone just kind of shaking their head, like, where are we? What is this? It's just like a bullpen with office administrators
so
and a bunch
with,
of offices.
You went, in terms of field trip, you went with the
with
class.
With the class.
Oh, okay. Marymount class.
Yeah, it was amazing. Michael Donald laid it out for us. He said, this is what I'm doing. I rent space in here, and I have one bed, and I've got a desk, and I have a manual therapy skills, and that's what you need. That is what we are trained to use and help folks with. So, not long after that, I shot him an email, made a phone call, I sat down with him and said, listen, what are you doing? This seems like a way around the previous thought that you got to buy the whole, you got to buy some people, you got to get some marketing going, you got all this stuff in this clinic.
When someone's doing something that seems so simple and you're like, this seems way too easy. You know, it's almost like David Copperfield. You saw the girl in half, but I think if I saw anybody on the street in half, I'd be charged with murder. So you saw someone who essentially rented an office in a virtual office suite, and they just said, you know what, I'm a PT, here it is. I need some space.
Yep.
I need a place for the patient to lay down or to move. And that's it.
That's it.
But not everybody's walking around doing that, so you're like, well, they can't be that easy. And Mike O'Donnell's looking at you going, it is. I'm doing it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
That's a fact. Not long after that, I said, well, let me look up how easy this is. I looked up a couple different organizations that do the same thing. One called Intelligent Office was opening a facility in Alexandria, not far from Arlington. I got in contact with some folks and got a tour of the place and understood kind of immediately, like, yeah, this can happen here. And I did kind of have to lay it out for them what I would be doing, but they didn't really balk at it. They're like, well, you're not going to be making any noise. You're not going to be doing anything, you know, that anybody in any office here who's, there's a lawyer there, there's a baker over here, there's, you know, people running their little used car sales office headquarters out of this one. Sure, go ahead. I think they wanted me to draw the curtains. I think that was probably the only thing they needed. So I was there for the meeting, and I found out that, oh, you know what? They're going to have a little fitness center in this facility as well. That is on the first floor that all of the tenants of the building could use. And I said, you know, that's actually perfect because I do need some extra movement space to utilize to maybe work some folks out, maybe do some personal training again, continue that service that I've been providing. And then also, as people progress in their physical therapy, do some more movement hardening and that kind of thing. So that was great. I was excited. I asked what kind of equipment would be in that room.
Because this place wasn't built yet.
No, this actually was not even done being constructed.
So you had kind of the end. You had the ear.
Yeah, you know, it's like anything else. It really is time and place. Luck is sort of in there.
Okay.
And I would probably wouldn't be sitting here with you if I didn't kind of stumble upon a building that hadn't been yet finished.
Right, okay. So they're going to build all these things.
Right. When I was told what was going to be in that room, I was excited and then kind of puzzled. There was going to be a couple treadmills, maybe a set of dumbbells and like a bench. You know, so
typical gym.
Yeah, it's kind of a Courtyard Marriott.
Typical, right, Hampton Inn gym.
Exactly. Well, I said, you know what, can I speak to somebody about what's going in there? Who's making this call? People at Intelligent Office gave me the name of the owner of Simpson Properties. And Simpson Properties, for anybody who doesn't know, is an enormous construction and property management company in Alexandria.
All over the place.
All over. It's amazing.
They probably make a couple bucks around
here. Probably do okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why, because the people at the top really are amazing people too. Like the owner, that joint. Really understands bigger picture. Employee health was a big thing for him. And so
that's why they're putting the gym.
Yeah, exactly, okay, right. And so when he heard someone who's going to be moving in, who had some experience in this field and also had some vendor relationships for equipment and things, he was excited. I said, listen, let me have a little bit of control over what goes into that room. I'll save you a little bit of money because I've got relationships with folks who sell equipment.
Cut costs.
Absolutely. And it'll be a versatile gym where anyone who goes in there will find something that they will enjoy doing. It was like a 600 square foot room. It was not a big space. But in my personal training business, I was working out of a 500 square foot room with five other trainers at the same time. And it was an amazing space as well. It was five trainers, had their own kind of gig, and their own clients, came and go as they went. And so we paid a little bit of rent to the person who bought the equipment. But otherwise, you know, we just did our work. I was building a similar facility, so I understood flow. I understood equipment you needed, equipment you didn't need. And when I presented the plan, I think I saved that guy about $12,000.
And just on building the gym.
Just on building the equipment. You know, we changed from six treadmills and a couple sets of dumbbells to a full squat rack, three pieces of cardiovascular equipment, several functional pieces of equipment to include bands and a rack for the bands and medicine balls and all kinds of stuff like that. Some kettlebells, a little universal gym. It was really nice. I was really proud of it. And they used it a lot. We saw a lot of tenants through there. And it was a great relationship. 3 years into
that. But I want to stop right now.
Go for it.
Relationship.
Yeah.
That's one way that you were able to beat the system, relationship.
Yeah.
You saw an opportunity and you said, let me just talk to someone and you build a relationship. So I'm going to guess, because we haven't gotten too far in your story, that's a big part of that. And that's what we like to claim as PTs we're good at, is building relationships.
Yeah, that's a fact. And
because that doesn't happen every day, that sort of situation where, hey, let me help you.
Right.
And then you redesigned the guy's gym, saved him some money, but you got what you wanted. He got more than he wanted, which is including a tenant. That's a relationship.
Right, yeah, go ahead. No, it's a very big piece of it. You know, we go a couple years, things go okay. I leave my mill job because at some point I start to realize.
So were you doing this at the same time?
Oh, yeah. So my schedule was this. So I would do some personal training inside of my new facility from about 6 a.m. to around 9 a.m. I would go to my mill job from 9:30 to around 4:30. And then I would go back to my facility and personal train from about 6 to 9 again.
So the first part is relationship. The second part is hustle.
Yeah, just getting it in, man. You have to have that. You know, too, you meet folks all the time. You got to understand when opportunities come by that you, and this is going to sound terrible, you can take advantage of, or you can create a mutually agreeable relationship. Like, look, I'm going to do something that's going to be helpful for you. I think you're building that equity. Someone's going to want to help you out. And everyone just kind of helps each other.
Well, that's what a relationship is and should be. And I had a great guy who I worked with, who was a sales guy, which is like, oh, creepy sales guy. But he said, like, in radio, he's like, look, if I sell you something that doesn't help you at all, I just burned a bridge and I'll never be able to convince you to buy advertising again. But if we do something mutually agreeable, you give me money, I help you promote your business, you take that and make money and you come back, that's a relationship.
Right.
So you saw that coming and you took advantage of it.
Yep, absolutely.
That's a big part of the piece that some people maybe just don't know how big that is or don't get.
Yeah.
All right, keep going.
Yeah, so okay, we're 3 years in. We expand from a little teeny 300 square foot space with one bed that fit into a 800 square foot space in the same place that fit two beds. So yippee, I'm growing, right? A couple bad hires, a couple funny relationships with some therapists because I don't know anything. You know, I'm not a business guy. And actually, the reason why I mentioned Billy Joel as a thing is that my favorite line of any Billy Joel song ever comes out of the song The Entertainer. And he says, the things I did not know, I learned by doing twice. And that's a fact. And I get asked business questions from people who want to do what we're doing. And I go, I don't know anything other than the things that I have screwed up already.
Yeah,
you know,
don't touch the hot stove twice.
Yeah, that's it. You figure out that that's a bad idea.
Just a sidebar, in my college radio career, in the first radio station I worked at, getting paid to be a radio DJ, which blew my mind that someone would pay me to stick around and play songs and talk. Every night when I ended my radio show at WSBU, which was St. Bonaventure University radio station, and the first place who paid me to do it, which was WMXO in Olean, New York, every night I ended, it would be old school radio, you had a sign-off song. Each DJ had their own sign-off song. Mine was Billy Joel, Only the Good Die Young, because I went to a Catholic school. My line introducing the song as I said goodnight was, the Catholic girls start much too late for me. Good night, everybody. So we both love the Billy Joel. We love awesome. Picking out the line. So you learned by doing it twice. You doubled in size. I mean, you know, you kind of like shrugged that off, but you doubled in size. You went from one bed to two. That's a lot of people don't exist past a year or 2 years or 3 years, and you doubled.
I never thought about it that way. I did double in size.
Still being there is a big deal, but you actually expanded. So now what happened?
Okay, so our lease is up. The owner of the building, Mr. Donnie Simpson Jr., is an amazing guy, says, hey, listen, we want to maybe expand kind of our relationship too. Would you manage another fitness center in another Simpson building? Or would you move your headquarters to this building so that you could be there full time? Well, I said, yeah. There was really very little in regards to risk for me. We're being offered a larger space to do more of the movement therapy that we do. Larger clinic. Now we have 3 beds, so I don't know what percentage increase that is. What is that, 30? I'm not a bad... Yeah, it's like something like... Yeah.
Do the math later. We'll put this in the post-production.
So we'll, I have 3 beds in a 2,000-square-foot gym. Clinic is about 700 square feet, and the remainder is fitness center with a lot of open area. We have turf floors. We've got sleds and kettlebells.
So
and
still relationship, because they wanted you to move.
Yep.
They were willing to work with you to give you some more space, and they're like, well, we get something out of it because this guy, Carlos, we know him, he's helping us keep other people happy, keep other relationships working with you managing that fitness center.
Exactly. So all the tenants of the Simpson buildings
could
that are adjacent
that.
To that could use that. Yeah, it's like a free gym, an amazing tenant.
That's what
amenity.
Win-win is.
Yeah, absolutely. It was it's great. Well, we're 4 years past that, and we are struggling to find places to put people now. Not physically, but in the schedule mostly, right?
Yeah.
So we have three...
Great problem to
Yeah,
have.
We have 3 full-time therapists, a full-time office administrator, again, some contract personal trainers. Everyone does an amazing job. It's a beehive of activity. Everyone, it's like the most live place you've ever been in. And it's just a great place to work. We're at a position now where we need to make a move, and we're probably looking to expand sometime summer next year of 2017. I'm a little excited. I don't want to rip too into the details about what we're going into, but we're looking currently at about a 7,000-square-foot space.
That's
also
big.
In Alexandria.
It's big. Alexandria.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Not the cheapest place in the world to get a square foot.
No, but I have been told pretty clearly that you can't do this as a cash practitioner, so I'm still waiting for the bottom to fall out. Yeah.
Well, you've been doing it for a couple of years now, so... Hopefully that doesn't happen now.
Does that come through on the mic, that big sigh?
I want to make sure people can get some information from you. Sparkphysio.com. I like the fact that you use physiotherapy. I think the Brits and the Aussies, the Kiwis, I think they have it right. I like physiotherapy better than physical therapists,
yep.
But we're in America. And you can check out Carlos online at SparkPhysio on Twitter. Sorry, we're taking a 60-second break. I need another beer. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your exercise background. I want to talk about hybrid PTs, because I know you are one of those, and I kind of like that. I'm drawn towards that. I had the conversation with Danny Mata about the hybrid PT, and I don't know, I just get excited about it. I think that means that's the direction I should probably head in if I'm excited. We'll take a 60-second break. We're back on the PT Pinecast with Carlos Barra. Don't move.
This is the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is powered by PTLive.me. PT Live wants you to know you love ortho, but love doesn't always pay the rent. And let's face it, home health is, well, home health. Join PT Live's growing team of on-demand physical therapists working from anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Screen patients, help clinics nationwide, and next date night you can say, have the ribeye, honey. PTLive.me. We'll take it from here.
PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. 6-week online review courses with live webinars, personal attention from instructors through email, phone, or Skype, and practice tests. Choose from their Mastermind Study Group or the NPTE Home Study Bundle. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
All right, so we are back on the PT Pinecast with Carlos Barrio of Spark Physiotherapy. Physio, not physical therapy. I like the physio.
Yeah.
Online at sparkphysio.com, at sparkphysio on Twitter. So we are talking about cash base. We covered that, how you did it. You got to the point now where you went from being a PT student and essentially just the hustle game in doing a little personal training in the morning, working for the PT mill, and then coming back and doing it again, mm-hmm. to eventually opening your own clinic. So you've got some pretty cool insight. You've got a kinesiology background, a personal training background. You've got, let's stop calling it a kines background and a personal training background. Let's call it a movement background. You watch people move. You saw where their faults were, or whatever you want to call it. You know, that's just jargon, really.
Yeah.
And you said, I want to do it my way now, because you worked at, self-described, you worked at a PT mill, and you said, you know what? I'm going to take my ball. I'm going to go over here and play my own game.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say you can't do that. And you said, well, I'm going to go do it.
Go watch.
And you did it. And you're still doing it. And now as I walk in, you're like, you know, you're doodling on this thing and you're essentially drawing a picture of your next clinic where you're like, I don't know where this is going to be, but I'm going to move because I need to get bigger. So you proved it can be done and you're doing it. So now what? So whatever things are you passionate about? I know it's movement because that's what you tweet about. That's what you blog about on your website. So one topic that came up in discussion was advanced movement analysis. We say what? The APTA, what did you say? You corrected me. Practitioner of choice.
Yeah, that's what the Vision 2020 is has laid out. You know,
that's what we want to be as PTs.
Yeah, we want to be practitioner of choice specifically for wellness, health, continuing lifespan, movement, empowerment. You know, so we don't want to be thought of as like, oh, I hurt or I've had surgery, so then I need physical therapy.
My dad has no idea what a physical therapist does. I have to educate, not the patient, but I have to educate the father repetitively.
Well, we want to be a practitioner of choice in all of these things to include wellness and health and strength and all that. But we're really not equipping people from the entry level to do so.
So day one PT at a PT school. On Twitter, I hear this a lot. People will talk about what their education was like. And our ex-phys class was great. Sky Donovan taught a great ex-phys class. And it's fantastic. Man, there's so much more.
Yeah, it does. It does not end with short arc quads and planks, bro.
But isn't that on us though? Because I mean, I know some people say it's on us to go out there, and there's a ton of stuff we can find online in terms of videos. You put out a lot of video content. We were talking earlier about my roommate Trevor Stewart, who did an integrated clinical with you, who would come home and be like, "Whoa, check this out!" You know, you can find this on his YouTube channel, and you can find some cool stuff.
Yeah,
is that on us now to be lifelong learners?
Yeah, I think it's important to continue to get more experience in understanding what high level movement should look like, how you progress it, how you're safe in queuing, all that shit, right?
But we have all of that covered. Everything was covered in that.
In PT school?
In terms of how to do, I think, the basics. And that's what I've heard before.
The
is
basics.
How do you do the basics? Yeah. That's what you need to turn to cover in PT school to make sure you can be a general practitioner, a kick-ass general practitioner.
The problem, I'm going to tell you, is that on day one, when you have a real patient in front of you, the basics are not enough because there is no such thing as a basic patient, the basic client. They're going to come to you because they're hurt. Their pain is going to be related to something going on with inefficient motion or some traumatic stress or some overuse issue that is from moving around. Like, if that patient just was lying down all the time, they likely wouldn't hurt in any major way that they couldn't just live with.
Being lazy is safe.
Yeah, well, it sure is. Yeah, but, you know, eventually you got to get up and move around.
Right.
As a therapist, I was really excited that I had a lot more knowledge in movement training and Olympic lifting and all kinds of fun systems of movement. But I'll tell you, on day one, I certainly was not near the type of therapist I am now. If I go back in time and retreat everyone, I absolutely would do it.
I hear that
but
a lot.
But I want at least the folks who are starting in the physical therapy field to have more than just the minimum knowledge to address movement issues that they assess as, let's say the word is functional. I don't use the word a lot, but in this setting, I think it's a safe word. Okay. That we can assess a dysfunctional movement, whether it's related to a criterion movement or a movement that we know everyone just needs to do in their day-to-day, and then harden them so that they don't experience pain when doing that movement. That's it. And we are not equipped when we leave PT school to run that full breath.
Okay.
We are not equipped for it. I'm so excited. For the first year, we've had Marymount University come and ask us to teach a portion of their exercise physiology course in the summer. We did 2 days. We taught SFMA, which is consider an advanced movement screening tool.
Right.
And then we also taught safe progression of some therapeutic exercise and riding that line that we talked about. You know, finding that intensity that's hard enough to progress folks, but not so hard that it breaks them down and is too difficult for somebody to try. And also, not so easy that, you know, anybody could do it, and
right.
You don't need to treat your therapist at all. You can do it at home.
That's kind of like my line with patients. I'm like, I want to know if this is way too hard, and I'm looking for the way too hard. I can usually spot the way too hard, but I definitely do not want way too easy.
Right.
Because I'm wasting your time and you're wasting mine.
And I think that's kind of our gig at Spark. We might as well change our tagline to find the line or ride the line or something, because that's really what we spend our time doing, is really searching for that place. But it's not something that anyone's taught in PT school. Now, as a trainer and as a strength coach, I really had a great amount of experience just seeing that over and over and over again, and not just seeing it in Olympic lifting or kettlebell training or whatever else you want to throw out there, but also in criterion sports movement. I'm a baseball guy. A lot of our patients are baseball athletes, softball athletes, and what I would consider the rotary power twisting, that kind of thing. Tennis, golf, think of those, volleyball, because a lot of the movement patterning, a lot of the compensation when something's going wrong is similar. Well, what does that then look like when that person presents to you, not jumping in the air, just walking into your clinic? And what's a neat tool you could use to kind of parse out, well, you know what? I think this is the place where you lack the most ability to move, or you lack the most stability in an area, and I might be able to do something helpful for you. Once you have figured that out, you can throw all kinds of treatment at it. Manual therapy is amazing. It can be used in every portion of the body and for a lot of different pain complaints. But when we get down to it, it's, does this person move again without pain?
Right.
That's what they want to do.
Right.
So we spend some time. Say we add wrinkles, we take wrinkles away. We make things a little more difficult, we make things a little bit easier. And it's not always just, well, do five more. That must be harder. Right. Add 5 more pounds. That must be more difficult. Well, yeah. But that might be still too much more difficult. You might have to say, well, what's an intermediate wrinkle? Can I put this person in a different position? We tried this thing in sitting. What if I tried it in half kneeling? And people, like, their heads turn sideways. Like, well, I never would have thought of changing that. You're either standing doing exercise, or you're sitting, or you're lying down, or on your tummy, or whatever. Well, half kneeling presents a completely different stimulus.
I'm going to give an example. We do integrated clinics at Marymount University, where we go out to a clinic for one day a week throughout the semester instead of just full time. So we get exposure to more types of settings. And my roommate, Trevor Stewart, came to you, I think, during our second year, maybe our first year. I don't know. I'm drunk. And he came home and showed us, it's just a simple example of, I never thought about it like that. It's literally backwards of everything I thought. He's like, hey, I saw this really cool external rotation stretch. I was like, okay. So did you take the patient's shoulder and stretch it in external rotation? I'm like, I've seen that, bro. He's like, no. We held it and had the patient bridge up. Then we externally rotated to the point where they weren't in any stretch or issue. And then had the patient slowly unbridge, slowly lower from the bridge. And they externally rotated. I was like, and I had to stop for a second and kind of look off into the clouds quizzically and say, oh, well, that's opposite. That's the opposite of what I do. He's like, yeah, but it worked. So the cool part is there's a lot of that stuff out there. Is there enough time in PT school to cover a fraction of that stuff?
Are you still learning how to turn on an ultrasound machine and what the crystal is called on the inside of that stupid thing? You're still learning that, right? That's like
we've
information.
We've got to learn that.
Yeah,
though,
you got to
right?
learn that. You
probably,
have,
I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, that's information you could just Google, brother.
Right.
You could just remove that nonsense.
Right.
Like,
we talked about this before. I don't know if it was a Twitter thing or a blog thing, which was to all the students out there, if you could remove one class from your program and still be an okay PT, what was it? And that was a raging thread.
Yeah. I could probably guess it's the number one class.
And
modalities. Everyone calls it something different. You know, look, ice and heat are great. Iontophoresis, okay. Great, I don't know. TENS, yeah, sure. NMES, maybe. Ultrasound, pretty resounding, no, right? So, you know, there's stuff we know because of smarter folks than you or I who are sitting at a lab and
right.
really measuring this stuff and saying, we probably don't need to do this anymore. So why don't we then just move on? Yeah, it's on the boards. It's a fact. But the amount you need to know from the boards is probably something you can Google.
Cover it in a weekend.
Yeah, but the stuff you need to know to get people to move better does not take a YouTube video. It does not take a weekend. It takes playing with, demonstrating,
right.
practicing, cueing, putting your hands on people, using body language, whatever you got to do to get the movement to be the movement you want.
So people give you cash money.
Oh, man.
Which, just so I'm clear, because a lot of times people throw around jargon, and I like to be very clear. So the difference between cash PT and not cash PT is what? How would you simply explain it to an idiot like me? Someone comes to you, let's say their shoulder hurts. They can submit to insurance, but they're going to pay you first. I'm hanging out with Carlos for an hour. Let's say you're $100 an hour. Here's $100, Carlos.
Yeah.
You work with that patient for 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
After that 60 minutes, they can, on their own, submit what Carlos did to their insurance company. And if they get money back, that's the money they get back. Let's say the insurance company deems what Carlos did $80 worth, but we know it's worth $100 because
yeah.
someone was willing to pay $100, which means it's worth $100. And the insurance company's, their magical, mystical formulas said, $80. We'll give them $80. Then essentially the customer paid $20 because they paid $100, got $80 back. They're still short $20, which means they paid $20 outside a copay or whatever they're going to pay in.
Yeah.
So did I get that right?
You got it right. The thing that we do differently, because we have fortunately been able to set up some systems, we do all that for our patients.
So you submit it.
So we will submit it for them. All they got to do is come and get treated, and then they'll get a check in the mail.
Okay.
Now,
So what's the difference between that and a clinic who is insurance based? The clinic sits there and waits and hopes and prays.
Yeah. So you'll get
for the money.
You'll get treatment. Physical therapy treatment on the whole is generally somewhere in the area of, and this may be some groundbreaking behind the scenes. I hope I don't hurt anybody's feelings here. Probably around $240 to about $320 for the combined units of a single treatment of physical therapy.
Okay.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I really wish I could charge that. But really, you must understand the reason why we charge that number. It's mostly because most third-party payers don't pay you that amount.
So we inflate the value. We have to overcharge because we say, we're going to charge $300. We'll keep the numbers around because I'm going to do math.
Sure.
We're going to charge $300 because I know you pay a third. I'm going to get $100. I need $100.
Right. And so what's going to happen next year? When insurance company says, okay, listen, we're going to decrease the value of what we think you just did 5%.
I'm going to charge 10%
more. There you go. Okay. And so again, the game.
It's a dance.
That okay. I just, the energy spent, and unfortunately, the energy actually needs to be spent on the side of the therapist. So this burden of documenting things in such a way that will keep the lights on in a clinic is down to the therapist, because therapists at many clinics, in the clinic that I was working at in the mill setting, we would have a system of folders. If you had a blue folder, you were dealing with a patient who had health insurance A. If you had a green folder, it was health insurance B. Well, if you had a green folder, you definitely did not charge anyone for any treatment that you would classify as neuromuscular education.
Why?
Because they didn't pay for that. But they like to see therapeutic activity. They would pay us for that.
So you modify your treatment based on the paying, or you modify how you bill for the treatment.
Yeah.
Hopefully you don't modify the treatment.
Yeah. Hopefully you don't modify the treatment. But you do modify the language in those settings. And that is a...
We're dancing.
Yeah,
we're
dancing. We are just... we're doing it. My sense of that, in the general terms, is that that is energy, time, knowledge that is taking up space
in your head,
in a brain somewhere, that is really better equipped to just do the shit that needs to be done.
That could be taken up by this cool external rotation stretch in a bridge.
Man.
I could have that in that
let
in
me,
that little,
let me shoot you
little
a link.
Kilobyte of memory.
That's
yeah,
it. That's all right.
I just want to make sure I had the vernacular right, because a lot of times, again, this is my second career. I'm coming in from a journalism communications background, and I want to make sure, because a lot of this stuff goes by really fast, and I think the problem is sometimes, especially for a student, we use a lot of jargon, but we have to because there's a lot going on, so we have to shorten it. So I want to make sure I had everything right. So what you're saying now is, how does direct access cash practice allow for the growth of next gen PTs? We want to make sure we're not all PT mills, because according to PT mills, or places that are assembly lines, you have to see two or three patients an hour at the same time to make sure the lights are on.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing at the top of that pyramid scheme, somebody is living on an island because there's a therapist seeing three patients an hour. I don't want to be that therapist. I do want to be the guy on the island, but not that way.
Yeah, that's a bad way to... That's just bad mojo.
I don't want that karma.
No, that's bad. Folks going toward the direct access lean, toward the cash pay side of things.
Towards your hurt, I can unhurt. You pay me for my service because my service is valuable and has value.
Right.
That sort of model.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the direction I think the majority of physical therapy aspires to go toward. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of doubt that while I may think that my service is valuable, there's an entire community of folk being told by a number of different people that there are other things that are out there that are more valuable, and physical therapy is only for these things. So it is an uphill battle. You know, you do have to educate the community, but that's one of the things that as a direct access practitioner and as a cash practice guy, you have to change the way you think about what you do to educate people, and you market directly to those folks. I want to see baseball players? Great. I'm going to do some baseball stuff. I'm going to do a baseball seminar. I'm going to teach baseball kids. I'm going to go coach baseball. I'm going to whatever. The same goes if you like Pilates, if you like dance, if you like wrestling. It doesn't matter.
I want to talk their language to the person who I would like to treat, or the person I feel like I am most equipped to treat.
Yeah, and you know, that's not a bad thing to say, you know, well, I like wrestlers. I'm gonna treat wrestlers. Because you really should, in this side of it, when you're running a practice, you should be doing the things that are the hell yeah things.
Yeah, I want to do that. That's what I want to do.
Not like, oh yeah, I could help a ballet dancer. Now, yeah, I certainly could see a ballet dancer who has some knee or hip pain and probably make them better. I might not be able to speak their specific language, but certainly I could watch a Criterion move or do some ballet and say, yeah, I think this is what's going on, and probably do fine. But that doesn't light my fuse, right? But there are people out there who do that. Right. I know some folks who are amazing people who only work with dancers. Well, we're the baseball guys. We're the rotary power guys. So we have track athletes who are our physical therapists, a long distance runner, and a sprinter. So this language we speak all day long with people who run tries and do, you know, all kinds of amazing athletic things just really makes us excited. So when we're at a blog post or when we make a tweet, it speaks right to those people. Instead of, I got to market to a physician, I got to tell a doc I have a shingle hung up somewhere and they should probably send all of their rotator cuff repairs to me. Well, maybe they should anyway, because you're the best rotator cuff repair person, but the docs hardly know what we do. If you want to treat rotator cuff repairs, start telling the world in your little neck of the woods, you are the best rotator cuff repair person and here's why. Start talking about it.
Goes back to what we talked about in the first half of the show, which was the R word, relationships. Yeah. You want to talk about, you know, you want to be the rotator cuff guy? Well, make sure the world knows that you've built a relationship. Hey, I'm Carlos. I'm really good at this, and if this ever happens to you, you should come see me. That's a relationship.
Yep, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Are you still having fun doing it?
I'm having an amazing time. This is the...
It's ballsy. Opening a business is a ballsy move because just mathematically, most of them don't work.
Yeah, we have passed the 5-year mark. We've passed the 7-year mark. Those are marks I was told by someone that they're not.
Yeah, it's earlier than that. A majority don't make it past year one.
Whoa.
The small minority who do make it past year one definitely don't make it past year three.
Ooh, wow.
And you're still doing it. So cheers to you having fun. We did reload the beers, just FYI, for making it past that. You also brought up that any PT can change the way they practice today. Yeah. But what if you're working for a place that isn't so pliable? How do you integrate that sort of thinking without, you know, ruffling the feathers? Because a lot of people are, you know, they're trying to make ends meet.
Sure.
They're trying to keep their job, and they're trying to give good care. How do they sort of integrate some of these practice ideals or ideas into their day-to-day vernacular?
You know, I think we got to first start by stepping back from this cookie-cutter thing. I think it goes back to being excellent, excellent movement analysts. Whatever tool you want to use... We use the SFMA. It's a really useful one for us. You want to make up your own tool? I don't care. But you need a system that is somewhat proven. And what I mean proven is you can assess something, see something is less than optimal, treat it, and test it again, and go, I made a difference. Yeah. And that difference relates to the person's goal of moving in this way.
Yeah, I like that. We touched on that in one of my very first episodes here with my friend John Noyles, which was test, treat, retest.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I think about every day in clinic because he's a guy who I've been friends with for years, and he pointed that out, and I literally was, I think I was a first or maybe a second year student, I thought, oh, yes, I definitely need to do that. And then it was hammered home in the second and third year of school to do that. But I think when you're time crunched and you got, you know, 30 minutes and five needs to be with ultrasound sometimes, a lot of times that's not in your mind, but that should be and definitely should be in the forefront of your brain.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a system immediately cut down on the amount of time you need to find out what is wrong. We are taught in physical therapy school all of the angles that are necessary to every single joint of the body and what muscle strength should be like and what nerve tension should be like and what tissue texture should be like and all this stuff. We taught all this great stuff. But we hone in so directly on where are people hurt sometimes. Like, oh, your shoulder hurts. Cool. Let me do all these fancy tests and have fancy names and cool acronyms. And I can say you are positive or you're negative. Well, great. But there's a reason why that rotator cuff is torn, or there's a reason why that biceps is under a ton of load. Like, and it really is not just because they hold their arm at their side.
Yeah.
It's because they're trying to do a movement, whatever which movement that is.
The why, not the what.
Yeah, that's it. So when you find the why, you can then say, all right, I'm going to save a bunch of time. I'm going to go after the why. I'm going to use all my manual skills. I'm going to use my movement coaching ability, my progression ability, my safe cueing ability to get that movement where it should be. And that doesn't have to take you outside of, you know, 30 minutes of treatment. I mean, we treat for 60 minutes because I think we treat some folks who want hands-on, the eyes-on, and are doing a little different kind of work. But the majority of people seen in a mill have a lot of pain. They're chronic pain folks. They're people who, you know, played some tennis and over a weekend or sprained an ankle and their elbow hurts or their ankle hurts. You can use these tools to shorten up your ability to find what's going on, treat what is specifically the issue, and then move them along. I taught a class recently to the first years at Marymount University. I was really excited to do so, and I think I left them with one thing. I said, don't accept the fact that you need to see 3 or 4 people in an hour. Like, we need to stop doing that. If it means talking to your CD, your clinic director, or your CI, say, how can I do this, or what's a reasonable way to see the demand that is coming in, but deliver good care. That number, I think, 30 minutes to an hour is the minimum.
Right.
And if you're asked to do more than that, I think you really need to take a good look at where you are, what you want to do, and then make an adjustment according to that. After 2 an hour, the amount of attention that I have learned that people require to get this stuff driven home, it becomes very difficult to
do. 2 an hour, over 2 an hour, that just goes fast, man.
Yeah,
you blink, you get a subjective. Next thing you know, you've only got, you know.
Let one of those
left.
People be 10 minutes late and your whole day's gone.
Oh, it's all over.
Yeah.
It's all over there. All right, every episode is a pint. We're almost done with our drinks.
Absolutely.
Before we're done with our drinks, we have shots. Parting shots of wisdom. What do you want to leave the world of PT with to keep in the forefront of their brain?
My big thing is never let anyone tell you can't do something. I was told from the beginning, actually, we're not training you to be a physical therapist who's a personal trainer. I said, okay, well, that's silly. I'm going to do that. Thank you. I was told you can't have a facility and staff as a cash practice practitioner. People have their health insurance and the desire to use it. And I said, okay, well, watch me do that too. You can't expand. Businesses go under in 5 years or whatever. I said, okay, well, let's see. If you think, you know what, I can't treat 2 people an hour. I don't have any clout to demand this kind of service delivery. Prove someone wrong. Because there are a lot of people out there who said, no, you can't do that. You got to see 4 an hour. Name the physical therapy company in the area, says this is the way it's got to be done. And then challenge them and say, you know what, we have integrity and we deliver a service that is of the highest value in physical medicine. And we need to spend that time. We need to educate people and go and do that thing.
I like that. Buck the status quo.
That's it.
Check him out online. It is sparkphysio.com or on the Twitter sphere at sparkphysio. Carlos Barrow, another Marymount saint. Appreciate you having a beer with me here in Alexandria, Virginia. Fantastic talk. Thanks for your time, man. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.